Good evening, everyone. If I haven't met you yet, I'm Rosie. I'm with the trainees and the dev squad this week, and it's good to be here tonight. Let me start you off with a question. What is the greatest opponent that you have ever faced in sport? Why don't you turn to the person next to you and answer that? What's the greatest opponent you've ever faced in your sport?
What, Tina?
Do you want that right thing?
I said, wait, say that.
Who?
Literally right behind there, did shiver.
I dropped my
head. It's not
any amazing.
Okay. Let me stop you there. So for me, my sport used to be ultimate frisbee, and I played for a team. You know, we wanted to be a good team. We wanted to train really hard, and actually, we wanted to be, you know, the best team around. But there was this one team called Iceni, named after a, you know, a warrior tribe, who were just unbeatable. Every tournament we played, maybe we'd get to the final and we'd always be playing against this one team, Iceni, and we'd always have high hopes and going, this is it. This is our time. This is the time we're going to beat them. One such final of a tournament is pictured here. You might be able to see that at the top left, the score is 5-0. We're 5-0 down after about 10 minutes already. And there's me desperately flinging myself on the floor, diving to try and catch that frisbee to score a goal and salvage something of the game. I'm absolutely nowhere near it. There's no chance I'm ever going to get my hands on that. It was ridiculous. We lost that match. And in fact, we lost every match. Let's move that picture on. We don't need to see that anymore. We lost every match against them for around the next 8 years. The day when we finally did beat them, you know, was probably up there with one of the best days of my life alongside, you know, marriage and children and all that. It was a big day. We face opponents in our sport, but we also face opponents, as it were, in our lives as well. In our lives, we face many challenges. Whether those are things which are close to us, like pressures at school or in sport, broken relationships, struggles with mental health, or whether those are sort of big picture things that humanity faces, like war or natural disasters or climate change, which feel like opponents which are just too difficult to overcome. But there's a bigger opponent than all of those. There is one great opponent that human beings cannot beat. And you'll see where I'm going. It's death. And death is something that is uncomfortable, is terrifying, and something that we hate talking about. But of course, we need to, because all of us are going to face it. It's going to happen to all of us. And as some of you here I know will feel the sting, the pain of death all too deeply already. But this talk isn't about feeling afraid or terrified. It's not about getting us down or feeling morbid. It's actually about this incredibly true story from the Bible, which gives us hope. Jesus offers life to the full. We've been talking about that, haven't we? Full, abundant life. But what does that life look like in the face of death? What does Jesus do? Jesus the life, what does he do in the face of death? We're looking at the next I am saying. I know that you've already looked at the death of Jesus, which happens later on in the Gospel of John, but we're going back a little bit to where he's still alive and he makes this incredible claim, which gives us great hope. So make sure you keep those John's Gospels with you as we go through the story. The first thing we're going to look at, verses 1 to 16 maybe, is what is Jesus doing? What on earth is he doing? Start down at look at verse 1, and here we get the scene of what's happening in the story. There's this place called Bethany, and there lives this family who Jesus knows. There's three siblings, Mary, Martha, and Lazarus. But all is not well. Lazarus is ill. You see verse 3, the sisters, Mary and Martha, they sent word to Jesus and said, Lord, the one that you love is ill. They know about Jesus. They know that he has the power to heal him. So they call him and say, can you come? He's got the power to do something about it. And then even more so, if you look at verse 5, it says that Jesus loved Martha and her sister Lazarus. And so, verse 6, when he heard that Lazarus was ill, he got up immediately and went to him. Is that what it says? No, it says when he heard that Lazarus was ill, he stayed where he was 2 more days. What's he doing? He stayed where he was 2 more days. What is he thinking? Why didn't he get up and go? And what are Mary and Martha thinking at this time as they're waiting? Jesus, where are you? Are you going to come? Lazarus is fading. Why is he should be here by now. Then in verse 7, Jesus says, right, let's go then. Let's go. And the disciples are like, mate, don't go there. They're going to kill you if you go back to the area. It's too dangerous. So you've got the sisters who are like, Jesus, why won't you come? And the disciples who are like, why are you going to go? But what Jesus does doesn't seem to make any sense. You think, if you are going to go, at least go early so there's still time to heal Lazarus. Why has he waited 2 days? What is he thinking? It doesn't seem to make any sense. And yet, Jesus clearly seems to know what he's doing. He's obviously got some sort of plan. In verse 4, he says, this illness will not end in death. Verse 11, he says that Lazarus is asleep. He's fallen asleep, but I'm going to go and wake him up. And why? Verse 4 again. It says it's for God's glory so that God's Son may be glorified through it. And verse 14 says, so that you may believe. There's obviously some purpose in what he's doing, even though it doesn't make sense to us. And maybe you've had times when you're desperately crying out to Jesus and it feels like he's not listening. He feels like he doesn't hear you and like he won't help. And you might ask, Jesus, don't you care? Or you might ask, Jesus, do you just not have the power? Are you too weak to do anything about this? We'll let this extraordinary true story show you just how much Jesus does care and just how powerful he is. See what Jesus does against our greatest opposition. See what Jesus does in the face of death. Let's keep going in the story. Verse 17, we see that in this section, Jesus brings words of hope in the face of death as he meets the first sister, Martha. So verse 17, Jesus arrives. He finds that Lazarus has already been in the tomb for 4 days. And again, you think, what were those 4 days like for the sisters there? And there's lots of people who've come to get alongside them, to weep with them and mourn with them in their grief of the loss of their brother. And I wonder, what does Martha think when she hears that Jesus has come? She goes to meet him. And she stands before him in deep sorrow. Maybe she's weeping. Maybe her tears have run dry. But from her place of grief, she speaks. Verse 21. Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. Is that a complaint? Anger? You could have saved him. Yet also faith. She calls him Lord. And then she says, but I know that even now God will give you whatever you ask. What's she hoping for? Jesus said to her, your brother will rise again. She says, I know he will rise again in the resurrection at the last day. She's faithful. She trusts in this future hope, this sort of idea that there'll be a resurrection someday, maybe at the end of all things. But yet Jesus has got more. He gives her more than that as we get the next I am saying. Verse 25. I am the resurrection and the life. I am the resurrection and the life. Not just there is a resurrection one day, but I am the resurrection. I am the life, Jesus says. It's me. It is me. He says, the one who believes in me will live even though they die. And whoever lives by believing in me will never die. What does that mean? Well, if you believe in Jesus, you get life. You get life to the full. And yes, you still have to face death. But the life that Jesus gives you is stronger than death. After you die, you can live. After you die, you can be resurrected, which means raised back to life, and then never die again. Get this life to the full, which goes on forever. What a claim that is. What would that mean if it was true? that even though I have to face death, that I don't need to fear it. A life without fear, knowing that death is not the end, the best is yet to come, knowing that I'm so, so safe. Verse 26, Jesus says to Martha at the end, "Do you believe this? Do you believe this?" He says those words to Martha, but they echo down the centuries to this room here and now as Jesus asked me the same question and he asked you the same question. Do you believe it? Do you believe that Jesus is the resurrection and the life and that your life and your death is so safe in him? Well, verse 27, Martha in faith says, "Yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Messiah, the Son of God who is to come into the world." And yet she doesn't even know the full story yet. She hasn't seen the proof for Jesus' claim. And nor have we, not yet. But before we get to that, there's something else that we need to see about Jesus. There's something else that we need to see about Jesus at a graveside and about how he meets us in our pain. Is Jesus just some teacher from above who makes these grand theological statements but actually knows nothing of the real world of pain that we live in? The next thing then, Jesus weeps in the face of death as we now encounter Mary, the other sister. Verse 28, Martha goes to get her sister Mary. The teacher is here and he's asking for you. So Mary gets up quickly. She goes to meet him in the same place Martha did. But the other mourners are coming as well. The other people weeping are coming to see if she's all right. There's a crowd this time. And how will Mary respond when she sees Jesus? Verse 32, she fell at his feet and said, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." The same words as her sister, maybe the same rebuke, the same anger, maybe the same faith. But she falls to her feet, maybe in worship, maybe in desperation, maybe both. And what does Jesus do? Mary's there before her, before him weeping. The Jews, the others around are all weeping. Verse 33. When Jesus saw her weeping and the Jews who had come along with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in spirit and troubled. Deeply moved in spirit and troubled. This doesn't mean that he was just a little bit sad. Deeply. It's from the very depths of his being, from the core of himself. His heart is breaking for this. And this word can also carry this sense of anger. There's an outrage here. What's Jesus angry at? Why is there the outrage? Well, what happens next? Verse 34, Jesus asks, "Where have you laid him?" "Come and see, Lord," they replied. Isn't that profound? Jesus, the life himself, is invited to come and see death. What happens when Jesus, the life, meets death? Verse 35 is the shortest verse in the Bible, just two words, but some of the most powerful. Jesus wept. Jesus is surrounded by weeping, and does he stay clear? Does he keep his hands clean of it, just like some distant being? No, he weeps. He weeps with them. And you can ask the question, why? Why is he weeping? We've already read the rest of the passage. Jesus has already said that he's going to raise Lazarus from the dead. Spoiler alert, it's going to end well. So why is Jesus weeping? Verse 36 says, the Jews said, "See how he loved him." Jesus weeps because he sees their grief and he grieves with them because he loves them. He enters into their pain. Jesus, the life, sees death and he says, "It should not be this way. Death should not belong in this world. It is an imposter. It is not welcome here." And Jesus is angry about that. But Jesus also knows that death is a road which he is going to walk down a couple of chapters later. Jesus, Son of God, is not a distant God. He's not a faraway God who looks at the pain of the suffering in the world and just stays out the way. No, he enters into it. He experiences suffering. He experiences death itself when he dies on a cross. And that's why it's said that the Christian God is the only God with scars. Scars that whisper, "I know what you're going through. Whatever you're facing, your disappointments in sport, your battles with injury, your struggles with anxiety or your pressure at school, the tears that nobody else sees." Jesus says, "I know. I get it. And I'm with you." Jesus cares about suffering. Jesus weeps at death, but is that enough? Could he do something about it? He's claimed that he can. He's claimed that I am the resurrection and the life, and that is a big claim. Sports people can sometimes be guilty of making big claims, which can't necessarily be backed up so easily. At Christians in Sport, when I was a younger staff member some years ago, again, that was a little bit of a problem. So we had to introduce this concept of Robocop. So what would happen is if somebody made a claim, like, you know, I reckon I can do this, then someone could say to them, Robocop. They've got two options. The person can either go, all right, I can't do it, I back down. Fine, they've admitted it. Or they can try and back up their claim. They can try and achieve the thing that they said that they could do. If they do it, fair play, your claim was justified, absolutely fine. However, if they fail, they get Robocopped. What that means is your head gets shaved, your hair, from ear to ear like this. So the front half of it is bald and there's still hair on the back. Here's an example of a young leader who this happened to some years ago. You may or may not recognize him, but he is in this room and he is working with the dev squad this week. But enough of that. You can ask the story later on. Enough of that. Jesus, you've made the claim. You have said, I am the resurrection and the life. You have said, I am going to raise Lazarus from the dead. Prove it. Back it up. Robocop it. Here we go. Verse 38. Life versus death. Jesus, once more deeply moved, came to the tomb. There it is. That deeply moved, that outrage, that anger again. Why? Well, Jesus isn't coming to this battle as an idle spectator, just a fan watching from the side, not a neutral. He comes as a fighter, as a wrestler preparing for the contest, about to start a fight with the greatest enemy ever. This is life fighting against death. Who will win? Jesus isn't weeping anymore. He's taking command now. Verse 39, he says, take away the stone. But Martha, the sister of the dead man, she says, but it's going to smell. This dead body has been there for 4 days. Then Jesus said, did I not tell you that if you believe, you will see the glory of God? He's fully in control. He knows what he's doing. What will believing in Jesus mean? Suspense is building. Verse 41, so they took away the stone. And Jesus looked up and said, Father, I thank you that you have heard me. I know that you always hear me, but I said this for the benefit of the people standing here, that they may believe that you sent me. There it is again, believe. He's going to do something which is going to help them believe and help you and me believe here today as well. Verse 43. When he had said this, Jesus called in a loud voice, Lazarus, come out. And the dead man came out. The dead man came out, his hands and feet wrapped with strips and linen and a cloth around his face. Jesus said to them, take off the grave clothes and let him go. Just three words. And Lazarus comes back to life because the one who said them, the one who commanded it, is the resurrection and the life. At his command, the dead rise. Someone said about these verses, look, Jesus had to say Lazarus specifically. He had to say his name, come out. Because otherwise all the dead would have risen because they heard the voice of the King of the universe who is the resurrection and the life. That is the command that he has. Life won, death nil. How does that help us as we're coming into land? One man was raised from the dead, sure. People still die all the time. It still feels like death reigns. This miracle did prove that Jesus was the resurrection and the life, but it wasn't the only proof. There's still a greater proof to come. This was just a warm-up to the real contest. So you fast forward a couple of chapters to another tomb. But this time, Jesus is the one who's dead. Life itself is laid in a tomb. He's been crucified, and he cried out his last words, it's finished, and he breathed his last, and it feels like death has won. All of the forces of evil are celebrating because it seems like death has got the victory and the Son of God, life himself, is dead. And yet the story doesn't end there. Because at this tomb, the night is passing and the dawn is breaking as hope returns. A song we'll sing in a minute says, "Then came the morning that sealed the promise. Your buried body began to breathe. Out of the silence, the roaring lion declared, 'The grave has no claim on me.' Visitors come to the tomb, they look for death, and yet they find that the tomb is empty. The grave clothes are there, but Jesus is not, because he has risen." You're going to look at that in your team meetings tomorrow in more detail. Jesus is risen, the ultimate proof that he has power over death, the ultimate proof that he is the Son of God. So how can this give us hope in the face of death? Pete was a friend of mine and Woody's. He was in our small group at church. He was a Christian in sport. He used to play lacrosse for his uni. And he came up against the greatest opponent of all. And he died suddenly, tragically, as a young man, the week before he was supposed to get married. Woody was able to go to the Thanksgiving service. This man, Pete, had two sisters. And at the Thanksgiving service, they gave a tribute, full of grief and yet full of hope. These two sisters knew this story. They knew the words that Jesus spoke to these two grieving sisters, Mary and Martha. They knew the promise that Jesus said, "Your brother will rise again. I am the resurrection and the life." In their grief, they had hope because they will see him again. For all who believe in Jesus have that life, and the life that goes beyond death and goes on forever, so that we will meet again. What do we do in the face of death? We weep, we grieve, we ask questions, we can be outraged to say that it doesn't make sense. But is there hope in the one who gets it, who weeps with you, and in the one who proves that he has power over death? Jesus performed this miracle so that you may believe. John wrote down this miracle in the Bible so that you and I may believe. And that question again, which Jesus puts to Martha and puts to us now as well. Do you believe this? Jesus claims to be the resurrection and the life. Do you believe this? Take a minute now to think about that question. Don't faff with your packs or anything yet. Just think about that. Do you believe this? Why or why not? And then we'll sing some songs in response to this.